Harmony is everything. I think when we are very precious about our own story of our own allegiance and our own identities, then we lose awareness of the fact that we are the water. We are part of the harmony, the harmonic structure of the universe. And the individualism takes us out of that. And so as a musician, when I'm listening and I need to learn a harmony, if I start thinking, oh my God, am I gonna be able to hear this right? Am I gonna be crashing into the root note? Are we singing the same note? And I start thinking all that. I take myself out of the vastness of what's possible of, you know, for lack of a better phrase, finding my note.
Yeah.
But it's, in a way, it's like it's already always there.
Yeah.
Once you hear the chord or once someone sings a line, all the possibilities are already there in the room. And it's like the willingness to become that sound, then to become part of the other voices or the other voices of the instruments or the other voices that are singing, then you become one sound.
You're listening to The Rhythm of Rebellion with Taina Asili. Welcome to another episode of The Rhythm of Rebellion. I'm your host, Taina Asili, and today we have the privilege of conversing with an extraordinary artist and activist, Morally, a multifaceted artist who weaves the threads of jazz, soul, and folk traditions into a singular tapestry of vocal and acoustic splendor. Her life's journey has been marked by a deep devotion to human rights and environmental justice. Morally was raised in the vibrant multicultural tapestry of Jamaica, Queens, and educated at the United Nations School, Duke Ellington High School for the Performing Arts, and Alvin Ailey. Since then, her world travels have allowed her to sit with and sing for visionaries on the frontiers of social change. Her music has graced the ears of luminaries as diverse as His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Nelson Mandela, Richard Branson, Nobel laureates Betty Williams and Jody Williams, and many others. Morally's artistic journey has brought her to stages as wide-ranging as the Nomad Women's Festival in the Sahara Desert and the United Nations. Her dedication to using music as a force for change is evident in her role as a featured performer and speaker at TED Women and TEDx gatherings nationwide, as well as writer and performer of the theme song for That Kindness, a play for the Nurses of America by V, formerly known as Eve Ensler. And her impact goes beyond the stage, spearheading the successful benefit compilation Borderless Lullabies, which continues to support KIND, Kids in Need of Defense, aiding the reunification of children with their families after being separated by ICE. Morally is a dear friend of mine, and we've had the honor of performing together several times in collaborations with our mutual friend, Toshi Regan, who will be on the show later this season. Morally has also worked with Toshi Regan extensively as part of the cast of Parable of the Sower, the opera. Morally's latest venture includes the release of her first children's family album, Story of the Sky, in collaboration with her spouse and musical partner, Chris Bruce, created to ignite the imagination and joy of its listeners. So here we go. Hello, Morally. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I love what you're doing. It's so giving and life-giving. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's such a gift to have you on here. I've been thinking that as I was planning the next season, I really wanted to be able to have this conversation. I remember meeting you at a gathering. It was a party that a mutual friend was having, Alixa Garcia, and we got into a conversation about some of the music and healing work that we do.
Oh, yeah.
And as I was reflecting on, you know, the history of our friendship, as you know, in our conversations over email, I almost couldn't remember where it started. Like, we've had a long time friendship. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I love is just getting this opportunity to dive deeper. Mm. So I wanted to kick us off in that direction and ask you about the various musical traditions, the creating of this unique and powerful sound. How has your artistic journey and your commitment to human rights and environmental justice, how have they influenced the development of your musical style?
I love that. You are so multifaceted in your ability to give love to people and to community. So thank you for that. I have to come back to dance because I started as a dancer and I was a choreographer. I had a knee injury when I was, I guess, 19, 20 at Alvin Ailey. I was dancing at Alvin Ailey. I was in their full scholarship program. And I was really, you know, really, really deep in it. And then I had this injury and I had to go into the beginning level of dance class and just watch class and just do the bar, which is for people who don't know about dance or ballet, you just hold on to the actual ballet bar and do the exercises that way until I got stronger. But during that time, I would watch class and I started visualizing choreography in my head. And I've always written my feelings down in order to survive whatever I was going through when I was younger, when I was in high school, and when I was a teenager, I was on my own. And I realized that when I was writing like that, I was doing art therapy for myself. I used to write on the side of my sneakers. I used to write in the back of, you know, paper bags, the back of like little advertisements that back in the day that there were still paper advertisements in the back seats of buses. Mm-hmm. I would just write on everything. And I was actually writing poetry. And then later on, when I had that injury a couple years later, some of those poems or those words came back and I started putting movement to them. And so they were like survival poems into survival movement. And then I was blessed to be able to choreograph at Ailey at one of their student recitals and my first piece. And Max Roach attended that performance because his niece was dancing a piece I had choreographed. And then that piece was performed at the Memorial for Audre Lorde at, I think, St. John the Divine or Riverside Church. I wasn't there. I wasn't able to attend. I wasn't in town. But then he came back to another performance and asked me to choreograph his 30th year anniversary of the protest album called We Insist, which was on the recording, you know, it had Ossie Davis, had Abby Lincoln. When he did the live performance, it had a lot of the same performers that were on the album, except Abby Lincoln didn't sing. Cassandra Wilson sang that part. And there was a 30-piece choir and 19 dancers, and I choreographed that performance at Aaron Davis Hall with my dear friend Pilar Lynch, who was Max's niece, sort of god-uncle, god-niece, not by blood. But so that experience brought me into hearing more clearly the cry for social justice in so many words, for human rights, for dignity, for the most natural thing that any living being deserves to live in dignity. So it was a non-negotiable spiritual environment I had walked into, you know, to collaborate with these masters. And Ossie Davis was there. And I remember when I met him in the theater during a rehearsal, you know, we shook hands. I said, "Oh, it's such an honor to meet you, sir." And he said, "And you are?" And I said my name and what I was doing. He said, "Okay, I will watch your work and let you know in a moment if it is indeed an honor for me to meet you, too."
Oh, wow.
And I was like, "Damn, okay." And then he sat in the theater, he saw the choreography, he walked all the way to the back of the theater and he said, "My dear, it is an honor to make your acquaintance."
Yes!
he was really hilarious. He was mischievous. But so I think that the dance is the thing that brought me into understanding our roles as creative people, that we can actually speak in chorus with the grass, with the clouds, with the trees, with the people, with the water, for, you know, in honor of and in chorus with. I never feel like I'm speaking or singing alone when something's coming through about a situation.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
I know you know what
yes,
I'm talking
about.
I'm sure your listeners do too.
Yes.
I never thought I'd be a singer. And to jump forward, I was living with a beautiful dancer named Beverly Prentice in Brooklyn. And she was in the Urban Bushwomen. I came home one day just from, you know, being out. I don't know what I was doing. I came upstairs and in the living room was Toshi Regan, Jacqueline Woodson, and who else was there? Oh my gosh. It was just so many beautiful family members now. Anyway, Toshi and I became really good friends, and she is the one who really has brought me onto many stages. I still hadn't started singing yet, but when I did start singing, she taught me some guitar chords and said, "You're going to have to learn to play these songs so you don't have to keep hiring a bunch of dudes to come and play with you. And you can actually go and make some money, just hold your guitar and sing these songs that you wrote." So it's amazing how, you know, we don't really get to one place without the help yes. of inspiration of people and actually the welcoming in.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Morley, I can't even imagine a time where you aren't a singer, where you are identified in that way. Like that, I did not know that about you. I mean, I knew that you danced, but I didn't know that you hadn't centered yourself in that part of your gifts yet. And shout out to Toshi Regan, because Toshi has given so much to you and also to me. And Toshi's name actually came up in the first episode of the Rhythm of Rebellion season 3, and Toshi will be on the show later on. So
I know, I saw that, I was so excited.
Yes, listeners, take a look out for that.
Yes,
you've had such an amazing opportunity to perform with alongside some of the most influential figures in the world, and you just gave us a little snapshot of one, and I was wondering if you could share another moment or experience that particularly stands out to you.
Well, now that we've mentioned beloved Toshi, I would say she invited me to come to a studio, and I just started singing, and she said, will you come and sing on this thing I'm doing with my mom? And I was like, sure. And I thought I would show up and there'd be like 50 singers and I'd be like, ooh, in the background, you know? And there were 6 chairs and 3 microphones.
Oh, wow.
So we go into, I don't know what we're singing. We go into the studio. I know that Marcel Lashley was there. I think Marcel and Toshi took a mic. And then there were 2 other people there. I can't remember who that was there. And then there was Dr. Regan, Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan, Toshi's mother. Mm-hmm. Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan founded Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
She is a freedom fighter. She is a scholar. She is a very important presence on the earth and map maker.
Yes.
As I've heard Toshi describe Octavia Butler as like a maker of maps. So that's Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan for me, too. A real maker of maps and how to get from one place to another within, how to navigate. So there was one chair empty next to Dr. Regan. And Toshi was like, okay, you can sit with mom. And I was like, and this woman, so let me just back up, because when I was 18, my mother gave me a cassette of Sweet Honey in the Rock live at Carnegie Hall. I think it's 1973 is the year.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing recording. If you haven't heard it, please check that out. Live at Carnegie Hall, Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I wore that tape out to the point where I couldn't even see what was on the tape anymore. It just became a gray tape. And my mother, when she gave me the tape, she said, this is the best way I can explain to you what it means to be a woman.
Mm.
And so the songs on that, they really are so vast in terms of the journey of like the political journeys, political strife, the journey of a heart, what it is to love, talking about the divine and so many. I mean, it really gave, you know, when you're little, you're younger, you can like really somehow I feel like visions come faster or clearer when you just don't have that much traffic in your psyche when you're still young. So it really affected my life. So here I am walking to the mic. It's the first time I met Dr. Regan, and I felt like my knees were about to give out. And they started singing the song, and then I'm looking at Dr. She said, take the song out of my mouth. Just follow me. Take the song out of my mouth. And I said, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Turn me. It was that song. And I was familiar with that song. But, again, just new to singing.
Yes.
So Toshi just like, was like, here you go. This was your assignment to sing. Here you go. So... yeah, that's one of my great memories.
What did it feel like?
It felt like running next to a huge body of water, you know, and then flying, and then being able to swim, and then as soon as my mind, like if I got conscious of what was happening, I'd feel like I was swimming upstream against the current, and then then I'd have to let go and just take the word out of her mouth, and I was just flowing with the current. It was like that. It was a real immediate like teaching into sort of dissolving into the sound. That's always my prayer whenever I sit to sing, is to just dissolve into the sound. And that idea of dissolving into the sound is from a friend of mine's line of a song that she wrote about Jimi Hendrix. When he was in the military, he had to jump out of helicopters. Oh. And he would say to himself, I mean, he would dissolve into the sound of the wind through the trees as he was, the parachute would open. Mm. So I always remember that line in her songs. Her name is Halle. And so I always think about dissolving into the sound. And so that opportunity to sing with, you know, everyone in that room, mm-hmm. the five other amazing singers, was like, you know, it's like jumping into the deep end and then realizing you actually are the water.
Mm.
It's not about you being like, oh, I'm in the water. No, I am the water.
Oh, we're making
one
that.
Sound. So that's the goal for me always, to make one sound, to dissolve into the sound, make one sound.
Oh.
So that's one great memory.
Wow.
I have so many memories, but
I'm sure you do. And so I just want to touch on this piece that you just shared about dissolving into the sound, but also about jumping into the deep end and then realizing you are the water. I think that's going to stay with me for a long time. As I sit with that, you know, I think a lot about harmony and about what harmony means to me. I've shared in previous episodes that, you know, my father was a doo-wop singer. And I grew up, my sister and I, it was almost like harmony was our religion. Like that was how we were taught about the world, was through harmony. And, you know, he would do these exercises in the car where he would sing a note and then he would have my sister and I, you know, build on that note. And, you know, we had to learn how to listen to our individual voices, but also find our unified voice. And that really stayed with me in terms of both my sister and I's relationship. My parents have since passed, and like what it means to be different, but also be in unity together. Mm-hmm. And I love that you speak of this one voice, you know, this one powerful voice with many different layers, many different textures. Say more. What does harmony mean to you?
I love that. I'm so grateful every time you do talk about that, and that you talked about it with me today. I love that so much. You know, when I first started singing harmonies, I saw them as lines, as like colors of lines. So if I'm singing one note, if somebody's singing the root, and then you say the third or whatever, I would see that maybe yellow light, and then a green light or a blue light over it. And I would just see these sound waves, like of lights. And I think it's like movement. So harmony is everything. And right now, with what's happening in the planet, I think when we are very precious about our own story of our own allegiance and our own identities, then we lose awareness of the fact that we are the water. We are part of the harmony, the harmonic structure of the universe. And the individualism takes us out of that. And so as a musician, when I'm listening and I need to learn a harmony, for example, if I'm singing with Toshi in Parable of the Sower, or in anything, if I'm singing, I get to sing with you and I have to listen for the harmony. If I start thinking, oh my God, am I going to be able to hear this right? Am I going to be crashing into the root note? Are we singing the same note? And I start thinking all that. I take myself out of the vastness of what's possible of, you know, for lack of a better phrase, finding my note.
Yeah.
In a way, it's like it's already always there. Yeah. Once you hear the chord or once someone sings a line, all the possibilities are already there in the room. And it's like the willingness to become that sound, then to become part of the other voices or the other voices of the instruments or the other voices that are singing, then you become one sound.
Mm.
And that's always the goal, is to become one sound. Like, I don't want to be louder than the drums.
Mm.
I don't want to be louder than the other vocalist. You know, sometimes if it's like a thing about dynamics, that's different.
Yeah.
But like when we actually come and meet, it's like sound and people and hearts meeting in the center of the circle. It's like we're directing the sound into the center. And then to me, that is the divine. That is, it's like a flower.
Mm-hmm.
There's the seed, there's the bud, it's the petals, opens and contracts. It is collaboration. Harmony is collaboration.
Yes.
We are in dire need of collaborating with one another.
Yes.
And collaborating with Mother Earth.
Yes.
And get out of this crazy addiction of individualism.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the fact that your father would do that, what a teaching. What a life. Yeah. As you said, it's a life teaching.
Yeah.
And if you already are getting louder than your sister, then it was like, that wouldn't sound good. Like, you all learned not only to harmonize, but to blend.
Yes.
And that blend is, to me, is like, it. That's the best feeling.
The juice.
It's the juice. And it's like, and the thing is, Sayana, we know it's invisible. Mm-hmm. And it's fleeting if it's not recorded, you know, but then it stays. I think it stays and changes the molecular structure in the air. I mean, I don't think that. We know that. Science has proved that, whoever. People have been knowing that, that sound changes the molecular structure of the air.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's very cool. And we're wind instruments.
Yes.
So to find our harmony together is finding our likeness, is finding our collaboration, is finding our inherent togetherness.
Mm.
Yeah. Thanks for that question about harmony.
Yes. I'm sure you even have more to share.
I'm just learning all the time about harmony. I still feel very new to music. Mm. Yeah.
Well, is there anything that you brought with you from the dance world that contributes to your understanding of harmony?
I don't know how to answer that, but I could say with melody, definitely the movement of a story to being told, that is influenced by dance, absolutely.
Okay.
And harmony, it must be the fact that within dance, that there's the level changes. Because for me, the transition in dance is where I find God. Mm. I find the divine. Like from when you're up in the air and you have to come down to the ground, that moment of transition is everything. Mm. Get that leg up is an expression in dance. Get your leg up. It's like, how do you get that leg up? All the muscles that are in agreement and collaboration to get the leg up. And then the transition to bring the leg down, you have to be lifting up so high as you bring that leg down. So it's the oppositional pull.
Okay.
And that's their harmony. There's a harmony inside of that.
Mm. So there's harmonies within our bodies.
All the time.
Ooh.
If we really, really vibe on that and take time to like be quiet and listen to, or just be in movement and feel that.
Yeah.
It gives us a different appreciation for this miracle of being in the body.
Ooh, I love that. You spoke of collaboration, and that sort of brings me into my next question, because there's so much collaborative work that you've done sharing a stage with folks, but you also have curated a collaboration that I think is pretty powerful. Borderless Lullabies is such a remarkable project that you initiated in support of the Legal Defense Fund for Children Separated by ICE. I wanted to see if you could talk a little bit about the inspiration behind this initiative and maybe even some of the impact that it's had.
Absolutely. So the organization that Borderless Lullabies benefits is KIND, Kids in Need of Defense. And it is a pro bono legal defense fund. So lawyers go out and help unaccompanied minors who are sometimes 2 years old and do not speak English to defend themselves in court. It's insane that this is needed. Hmm. They're all over the world. They're not just in the US, but I learned about them through V, formerly known as Eve Ensler. I was at a gathering at her house, and she had just come back from El Paso, from the border there. And she told me that she was taken on a tour by the people of KIND through an abandoned Walmart that was packed with little boys, with children. And there were so many children who had been separated by their families that they had cots, little cots on the floor, like little individual beds that were sponsored by Wayfair, which is good to know that they actually sell and make profit from that. Mm. And there were so many children in the Walmart that they had to have names of streets in the aisles. And the names of the streets in the aisles of Walmart are named after American presidents. The intensity of the ugliness of what she described to me, and she was shaking while she spoke about it. We were both just... So that night after the gathering, I went to the gym. I did a prayer run. I just got on the treadmill and I just prayed. I was like, as I'm running, I think I ran for 45 minutes, which is very long for me because I usually just do 20 minutes. I'm like, ooh, that's enough. I just kept running thinking, what is the opposite of terror? What is the opposite of terror? What is the opposite of terror? And then finally, at the end, it came, a lullaby. And that throughout the centuries, all throughout the centuries, every culture has sung a lullaby to their children. And so, and that the borders are these man-made ideas. So the idea of borderless lullaby. And I was so grateful when you gave your song. You gave a beautiful song to the project. And so that's what birthed it. I went into the studio with my husband, with Chris Bruce, and a beautiful cellist, Dave Eggar. And we just started recording a few songs. And then I reached out to you, to Martha Redbone, to Toshi, and then to Jacqueline Woodson, great children's writer. And she's like, yeah, absolutely. I'll read from my book, The Day You Begin. And she read from her book. Funny stories. I went to her house with my little recorder. I was going to, my little computer set up. And they were doing construction outside of the house. So we actually went into her car and recorded it in her car that was completely silenced. And also we drove up a little bit, so it was quieter. We moved from the house. And then Chris added guitar to that and some keyboards to make it have some life of the sound, because it was such a dead sound in the car. And then Jacqueline Woodson's voice is so warm. So then Maria Popova offered us to read from one of her beautiful pieces. And then she's like, I'm going to ask my friend to play cello. And then the next thing I know, I'm getting an MP3 sent to me from Yo-Yo Ma. Oh my God. And then she's like, I have another friend who said that she has a beautiful lullaby. She said she could send it. It's only 2 minutes. I was like, cool, whoever. Meryl Streep.
Oh my God.
So it wasn't really like just whoever, but it was whoever really understood the value, of why this has to come to an end. So since then, that was 2019. And I released it on 4th of July. Because we really believe that the most patriotic thing we can do is to end the idea of borders and the terror that is being caused to these families, to these children, trauma. And so far, it's about $30,000 is raised for the Legal Defense Fund. The cool thing is I did through Bandcamp, so it's not available on any iTunes or any Spotify. The money goes directly to the organization.
Yeah.
So I don't have to deal with any of that, accounting, because no. That's too complicated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Bandcamp waived a percentage of their fee, so all the proceeds go to them.
That's
so
awesome.
Kind Kids in Need of Defense.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love this concept of you running and thinking about what's the opposite and finding the lullabies. Mm-hmm. I mentioned my father. He must be with me today because I'm going to mention him again.
Yes.
The other thing that my father did for my sister and I growing up in terms of teaching us the language of sound was sing us a lullaby every night. That was such a gift to be sung to be lullabied every night.
Yes.
And the song that I shared for that album is called Cucubano, these lightning bugs that are endangered in Puerto Rico. And it's a lullaby that I wrote to my children to help us to remember our bioluminescence, our inner light in the midst of darkness, right? Like this beautiful light that we shine. And it's in Spanish. And it felt like so fitting to share this as a part of Borderless Lullabies. I want to thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of this project that is so profound and important.
This song is so beautiful. Thank you.
And I want to thank you for the gifts that you give to children. I know that you have a recent release called Story of the Sky, which is a children's family album. And I want to know about this idea of making music for children. What motivated you to create music for them? What themes or messages do you hope to convey through this project?
Oh, thank you so much. Well, my husband and I were online at a farmer's market in Hudson, New York, and there was a little child in front of us singing Ring Around the Rosie. And I looked at him, I was like, damn, is that still in rotation? And he was like, I believe so. And so I thought, we're always talking about how messaging through lyrics or just messaging through the spoken word, the written word, just messaging lodges in the psyche and how it develops us when we're young and as we grow, and how it can change us as even when we're older and we read something, it can actually, the messaging can affect our consciousness and our psyche and how we move through the world. And I just feel like I have been so focused for so long, really on teenagers, when I've worked for many years with teenagers, and then older people, like grown-ups. And I was like, what about these developing minds? What about a beginning of life narrative? You know, we're getting hip to this idea of an end of life narrative, because especially in this culture, this country, I should say, in the Western thought that, you know, to fear death, all about the sadness and the sorrow and the fear of it, whereas it's a perfectly natural part of the cycle. And what about dignity? What about an end of life narrative? What about, you know, that, which is great. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what about a beginning of life narrative? Mm. And so that's what I was, you know, really interested in doing, is creating a beginning of life narrative moral compass project. So the songs, all they address our interbelonging with Mother Earth and with each other. And the songs are in Lingala from Congo, Tibetan from Tibet, which, by the way, in both iTunes and Spotify, because I had to put all the ISRC codes, mm-hmm. you know, I had to upload it all myself. I see that, you know, you have option for languages, and Tibetan is not a language that is not offered. Mm. And or Odhom also, because we have Ophelia Rivas who speaks an Odhom language. And so that's really frustrating when you get online and you see like these huge languages that are not recognized by the empire as being in existence. And in fact, they are. And a lot of them are threatened with erasure because of what's happening in Tibet or what's happening in this country. And so I was interested in getting languages that are sort of not heard as much in this context of collaborative compilation albums. And also, they just happen to be friends of mine and people I admire greatly. Right. So there's a song that says, I love you, river, in 22 languages. In fact, the families that gave me I love you, river, in Arabic and in Hebrew were both in Palestine and Israel, and I don't know where those families are right now. So there's a lot of current energy in that album as a call for love and healing and recognition of ourself and each other. There's also a song in Tamil. It's just, it's very beautiful. Toshi has a song. There's a lot of songs that, you know, we didn't write that we invited friends to offer.
Right.
So it's like that. It's a gift. It's for grown-ups as well, but it is a beginning of life narrative, moral compass project. And in fact, I had the name of the album. I was the working titles. We Are the Ones Family Project, Beginning of Life Narrative, Moral Compass Project. And people were like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then I asked a friend of mine who has little kids, and I said, I keep getting this, huh? And she's like, well, let me ask the kids and see what they think. Because we auditioned all the songs for the little ones with young, like 4 or 5 year olds and younger. And some songs we were directed, we're like one song, it says, L-O-V-E, love, love, love. L-O-V-E, love, love, love. L-O-V-E, love, love, love. L-O-V-E, love, love, love. And then there was these flutes. And then we come back, L-O-V-E. And so when the flutes would come in, they're like, where's the song? And so I was like, cool, take out the flutes for this version, for this album. So we just kept it as a chant. It never goes to the flutes, just stays in drums and the chant of L-O-V-E. Yeah, and that is inspired by Jason Reynolds, the great children's writer, who said that the muscle of anti-racism is to be able to see, if you can see yourself or someone you love in the reflection of someone who's different than you, mm-hmm. and see like some kind of likeness. Mm-hmm. And that the muscle of anti-racism says, I love you because you are you, period.
Right.
And so I listened to that interview with him on Being, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I wrote that song inspired by that. But one of the little ones we were auditioning the songs with, after 2 weeks after his mother had said, hey, what do you think Morley should title the album? And they're like crickets, right? 2 weeks later, this little four-year-old walks in from playing outside and says, Mommy, tell Moe, Story of the Sky. And I was like, what? She's like, I know, right? And she sent me texts with all these crying emojis. And I was like, let me look that up. Is that something he learned in school? Nothing. It didn't exist.
Wow.
So Asa Baker Russell gave us that name.
Oh, these wise and, children. Right? Oh, my goodness.
And he's singing on the album, too. He's a big star. And we have little ones singing on the album, too.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
The Ramamurthy family is singing, the six-year-olds and 4 and 8-year-olds from their family as well. So it's really beautiful.
Wow. Oh my goodness, Morley, this album is such a gift. I'll tell you, as a mother of 2 children and a former preschool teacher.
I didn't know that.
Yes. In another life, I was an assistant preschool teacher. And I remember looking for music to play for the kids. And it was hard to find music that had meaning, that had depth. You know, these kids are, as you just illustrated in this example, they're ready for it. They're waiting for it. They're wanting it. And I remember the one album that really sunk in deeply for me, circling back, was Sweet Honey and the Rock had an incredible children's album.
Love that.
And I still think about some of those songs. You know, there's not enough of these beginning of life songs for us to pull from. So I'm so grateful that you have made another important album that parents, families can utilize. You spoke about it's for parents too. And I'll tell you, I do not play music for my children that I don't want to listen to myself. You know, like I have to be vibing with it. You know, I want to be enjoying it. So I think it's so important that it's a family experience.
Thank you. I also just wanted to add that, you know, there's a school up in Ithaca that has 2 of the songs part of the curriculum now.
Wow.
For emotional development and mindfulness curriculum they have, which is great that they have that emotional development curriculum now. But I would say, like, if you do have a chance to listen to the song by Lokwa Kanza on the album, it's called Berkus. And when he sent that to us, he was in Kinshasa in Congo, and he sent me a WhatsApp file, and Chris and I were driving, and I said, oh, Lokwa sent us a song. You know, he plays imbira, guitar, he plays all these instruments. I thought it was going to be like some beautiful little melody, and it is a soundscape. It is fast. It is a journey. Mm-hmm. It is a prayer. It's and I was like, oh my God, is this too advanced? And I'm so glad that Chris was like, absolutely not. He kind of said what you said, like, they're ready for it. Let's address their intelligence, their dignity. And I was like, ooh, thankful.
Yes.
Thankful for you, Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
And so we go by the Bruces for that project.
Absolutely. So I wanted to talk about one more gift that you bring to this world. You know, your dedication as an artist and activist, you use it as a tool for dialogue, facilitation, and conflict resolution. I'm working with survivors of human trafficking and war. And I wanted to see if you could share how music can be a healing and transformative force in these challenging contexts.
Thank you. Well, depending on where I am in the world, I like to always try, if it is reasonable and available in the room, to open with a song and to close with a song that everybody sings together. So I would usually ask, is there a song you all sing? And I would learn the song, or I would just play simple percussion with whatever's happening. And it just, as we were talking about earlier, it changes the sound. Music changes the molecular structure in the room. It softens everything. It opens, it sort of like sweeps the air. That is when people are there willing to talk. And when there is tension and conflict, I find that no words are helpful. We just give everybody something percussive, or just invite them to use their hands and just create a sound together. And then we can start talking. A lot of the work I do is creative writing, using questions about colors, location, and elements of nature. So I usually use those 3 things when working with people. I'll ask them to think about something they would like to see happen in their lives. You don't have to say what it is, but what color is it? What are the colors? If it's blue, what kind of blue? Is it a cobalt blue? Is it an ocean blue? Is it a, what kind of ocean? Where is the ocean? You know, like, go and dive and deep in and to describe these things. But where is the location? Are you, to be brave to describe what location you're on in this describing what you would like to see happen in your life or see happen in your surroundings. Are you in the wide open desert? Are you on the back of a sparrow flying through the heavens, through the stars, or a back of a dolphin? Like, I use all kinds of images, especially with young people. Like, where are you? And then their images, the things that come up with are so amazing. And then what element of nature is giving you strength right now? And so then they write their words. What they would like to see happen is, or what they're moving through that needs healing, is never really said out loud unless they want to. But then we take those words and gather everyone's words and we make a song. Mm-hmm. And then they hear their words in the air and in a rhythm. The thing is that music softens the body, the fight or flight response. It slows things down. You know, we have to breathe in order to sing. We have to breathe in order to play an instrument. Yeah. But the dialogue facilitation is the talking part. So I do a lot of that. To me, that has harmony and rhythm in it as well, because you have to listen to the wisdom in the room. So I always believe when there is conflict in a room, there's also the wisdom of how to arrive to peace in the room as well, mm-hmm. within the individuals in the room. Because people just really need to be seen and heard. And right now, it's a great example of like hearing and seeing how hungry people are to be seen and heard, their story, their side. And we know that if we could get together and make a sound, that it could be a lot easier to communicate.
Yeah.
And there's a great proverb that says two people can talk at the same time to each other and at each other and not hear a word.
Right.
But two people can sing together at each other and make a beautiful sound.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean to you?
That we can harmonize. You know, if we're willing to meet each other. Because harmony is meeting each other in the blend and in the chord, right? Hmm. But we're singing different notes. So there's a meeting place.
Yeah.
And that's what we desperately need, is a meeting place of the heart.
Yeah.
And that's where we're still in this rotation of violence and conflict. The muscle of meeting each other in a place of the heart is a little atrophied at the moment.
Mm.
And we're so practiced in going into our separate corners. So much is available to us to encourage that addictive behavior.
Yes.
That muscle of meeting each other in the place of the heart is atrophied.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean it's dead. Mm. It just means we need to get that oxygen there and the wind power of the song of the heart, you know, music, the vibration.
Yes. I spoke to a previous interviewee about, you know, when we talk about social justice in terms of music, we often think about the lyrical aspects or, you know, the meaning. And we talked about the practice itself, like the actual physical vibration, you know, as a liberation tool, as a healing tool.
And Dr. Regan said, I don't know how anybody thinks they can ever get people to do anything together without a song.
That's right.
She said it really clear, like clean and clear. Yeah. I have to find that quote, but it's something like that.
Yeah,
it's,
no, I use that quote in my workshops.
Is it that, what I said?
It's something, it's like something that. Close to that, yeah. As we close, I wanted to just invite you to talk a little bit about the upcoming album that you have with Chris.
This album is coming out in the spring. We're figuring out if we're going to release it in two separate EPs or have one full album, to be determined. It's called Bloom, and it has songs that are about, you know, deep passion, love, courage, vulnerability. And we collaborated with the great Toumani Diabate, who's a beautiful choral player from Mali, and really heartfelt musicians on this album: John Cowherd, Michel Ndegio-Cello, Jack DeBow. I don't know, I just feel very excited about it. And also, I need to return to focusing on it because I've been so immersed in the Children's Project.
Mm-hmm.
And getting ready to release that adult album into the world that hopefully children will enjoy as well.
Yes.
So I'm excited to share that. And that's where that's at.
Mm, thank you so much. I can't wait for that album to drop. I look forward to it. Morley, thank you so much for bringing people together with song. I find you to be somebody that has such integrity. You know, you come to everything that we've collaborated with such honesty, openness, integrity, and just love shining so bright from the very first time I met you to today. So thank you so much for all of these gifts that you bring to the world.
Yeah, thank you so much. And right back at you, you know, this luminosity coming from you. It's so sincere. It's sincere, mm-hmm. and it's galvanizing, you know. It's we really need your voice in all its aspects. So thank you for this podcast and all the work you do and just your joy.
Thank you so much for being on the Rhythm of Rebellion. Much love to you and Chris.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Love you.
Love you. That brings us to the end of our enlightening conversation with Morley. Her dedication to using music as a powerful force for change is truly inspiring, and her impact on social justice issues is immeasurable. To stay connected with Morley and explore her captivating music, you can find her at morleymusic.org and on Instagram at morley_music. I'm Taina Seely, your host. You can keep up with my work on Instagram at Taina Seely, on Facebook at Taina Seely Music, on YouTube at Taina Seely, or my website, tainaseely.com. All these links will be shared in the show notes. Many thanks to our editor, Moses Nagel, and Sina Basila Hickey at Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave your thoughts about the podcast. Your feedback is invaluable and helps us to bring you these thought-provoking conversations. Until next time, peace, love, and liberation.